Welcome in, Jason Ross here on Sports 1140 KHDK on this Wednesday, September 15th. Hello to all of you on YouTube. We say hi. How are you? We appreciate you guys being there. We say hello to everyone on KHDK.com, on the app, smart speakers, or over the radio. The many different ways you can find us. We're going to lead you up until Oakland A's baseball a little over an hour from now as Sean Manaea will be back out on the mound. The A's will try to stop the bleeding, another bullpen blown game last night. We'll get into that today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Landry will join us for the first time this season from LandryFootball.com. He'll be a regular on Wednesdays as we'll check in with Chris and get the perspective on week one of the NFL and certainly college football. Chris is a former scout and breaks down tape, looks at all these guys, teams and angles, and it'll be great to catch up with Chris each and every week, each and every Wednesday. Today he is going to be joining us at 3:30 before we wrap things up as well. We will also have the crossover, our daily over-under, and again, leading you up to the A's and the Royals. Capital Casino is now open again with our outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. So plenty for us to cover today. Thanks again to Frank LaRosa. He and I just wrapped up Golf to Go's Golf Hour. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Really enjoyed the conversation that Frank had with David Faraday, one of the just the great entertainers in the world, really, in all elements, but certainly he's got his golf background, but just a great storyteller, some really good stuff with Frank, and so hopefully you guys enjoyed that in our Golf to Go Golf Hour. But let's do it. Let's start things out here, first and foremost, with First Things First.
First Things First.
Close things close.
Trey Turner blasts one into left center field and deep. Back goes Peralta to the wall. It's gone! A home run, Trey Turner!
Yes, the Dodgers got a win yesterday, and okay, what does that really mean in the grand scheme of things? It means that they were baseball's second team to clinch a postseason position, and either the Dodgers or the Giants are going to be left out of winning a division. And I've seen comments like, is this done right? Should baseball restructure? Is this fair? Yeah, it's fair. It's the way it's done. I mean, there's going to be on extremes, right? The outliers in every sport is where we get kind of these talking points and these angles that we say, are they doing this right? For example, when the football has a 7-9 winner in the past. Oh, they shouldn't have a home game. Maybe it doesn't feel right, but they do. Last year, it was Washington football team that won that division. They hosted. They had Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay had a better record. Well, Tampa Bay went in there and won and moved on. And if you're that playoff team with a worse record and you get a home game, take advantage of it and win, well, then move on. In this case, the Dodgers clinched a postseason berth. The Giants have already done it. Likely both teams are going to have a 100-game, you know, winning 100 games this season, and one of them is going to be the wild card. Two great baseball teams. The Dodgers now 93-53. They've won five in a row, and they do clinch a postseason berth with their victory last night.
First things first.
2-1 is hit to left field. Wade back, stops short of the track, reaches up, makes a catch, ball game over.
Giants Radio Network, Dave Fleming there last night. 9 in a row for the Giants. So they keep the Dodgers 2.5 back. The Giants win again. They're 95-50. And when I was looking at the standings today, amongst the many things, the many heroics that we've talked about with the Giants this year, this one might be the one that stood out to me more. And I don't know. I'd be curious what you guys say if you want to weigh in on the text line or certainly in our YouTube of what has surprised you the most about the Giants. From the beginning to now, the totality of their season has been absolutely amazing. A lot of it has felt like a surprise. But now I'm way beyond that point. Obviously, they're a good team. They've proven it. They continue to prove it. When I looked at it and go, man, the Dodgers are still just 2.5 back, but, you know, the Giants keep them there. The Padres are 20.5 games behind the Giants. How did that happen? The Padres, a good team. I thought they'd be better. They've hit the skids. They're 4 games over 500. They are 20.5 games behind, and they're in third. The Diamondbacks are 48 games behind.
I think I had the Padres winning the National League in my...
And I don't think that was not a crazy pick. I think a lot of people had the Padres winning the National League or getting out of the National League, maybe not even the West, maybe as a wild card team, which is still a possibility. But 20.5 games out, and they're above 500? Colorado's 28 back. The Rockies are 28, and the Diamondbacks are 48 games behind the Giants. But amongst the many historically great things that the Giants have done to put a fun, entertaining, good baseball team in your rearview mirror with 3 weeks to go, less than 3 weeks now, 20 and a half games behind you is truly amazing. That just shows you what kind of great work the Giants did this season. And, yes, they get the Padres again. So the Padres, you can get a little closer, or you can fall a little further behind. And the Padres have, meanwhile, lost five consecutive games. We've been talking a lot about the wild card in the American League and how it's set up that way with five teams searching for the two spots. In the National League, it's either going to the Dodgers or the Giants as the one wild card spot. And the rest is still up for grabs. You got the Mets, the Phillies, the Padres, the Reds, and the Cardinals battling for that one last spot. As of now, the Cardinals have it. Reds a half game back, Padres one back, Phillies still three, Mets four. But you look at the Reds, Padres, Phillies, and Mets, they have combined right now to have lost 12 games in a row between the four teams. So who wants that wild card position? That's why Cardinals, winners of four straight, have moved into that second spot as we speak. But congrats on the Giants, what they've done. Congrats on the Dodgers for also getting there as a baseball postseason team. It's just what order will those two teams fall in.
First things first. First things
first. All right. Well, last night, Chris was here running the baseball game. I got a text, I don't know, a couple hours into the baseball game saying, this is the longest game ever. And at the time, I was not watching the baseball game. And I said, oh, let me check in on these A's and the Royals. And the A's had, like, typical things with the A's lately. They had early lead. They're producing some runs. I said, yeah, well, okay. Is it one of those where it's like 20 to 4 or something? Why is this game so long? So when I checked in, let me see what inning it was. It was the sixth inning. Top of the sixth, just wrapped up. A's are hanging on to a 7-4 lead, so certainly not over, but you feel good with, what, 12 outs to go, up 7-4. Well, then the sixth came around, and I forgot about how Kansas City is one of the throwbacks. They are one of the teams that not only makes you throw strikes, but they put the ball in play, and they move runners over. And they steal bases, and they extend at-bats. And, you know, single here, tip off a glove here, stolen base here. All right, 7-5. Okay, you're still okay. Couple runners on for the big bopper, Salvador Perez. Bang. Home run, four-run inning. A's now trail, give up two more in the seventh. And the game went 4 hours. It was a four-hour baseball game. And I'm generally one to tell you that I don't have problems with sporting events that go long, but this is also September baseball, not for the winning at all. It was just the amount of pitches that each batter saw, the pitching changes. That was a long game. Chris, I think it was officially about four, right?
If it was 4 hours, the first three innings had to have been 2 hours.
Yes. And again, the first three innings, I mean, it was 6-3. There's a decent amount of runs, but it just dragged out and dragged out. And the most important thing for the A's is Miro Petit, who is as reliable as they get for Bob Melvin, was the guy that didn't get it done. When they really need something, he had, let me see his final line score. Wow, he only got an out. One out, four hits, four earned, one K, gave up the home run. The bullpen, I said it yesterday, in just the last couple weeks, they've probably blown 4 to 5 games, like winnable games. And they did it again yesterday. And with all that said, yeah, they're still in the race. Sure, they are. But this isn't going to get shored up. It's just, do they – I mean, 7 runs should be enough to get you a win, not to lose by 3. And to start out scoring the first six, you're up 6-0, and you lose 10-7. A's are 10 games above 500. Kansas City, again, not a great team, but a team that makes you work. That top of the lineup, now that Lopez has been called up, he's been hitting – I mean, he gets 2 or 3 hits a night. Merrifield is a really good hitter. He has 3. Perez is having a career season, but that's a team the A's need to beat. And they lost the first game of that series. Got a little help around them as far as what was going on in the wild card race in the American League, but not enough help. So the Yankees ended up winning. The Blue Jays won. The Red Sox, actually the Blue Jays won today. They had lost last night. Mariners had lost. So the A's enter tonight 3.5 back of the top spot in the wild card race.
First things first.
All right, let's get into some football as we start to look ahead for the weekend. right here in the middle of the week, looking to week 2 in the NFL and certainly the college football. But we start with rumors, rumors in sports, rumors in college football, rumors with Jacksonville already and Urban Meyer. A lot of people, and I'd said this on the radio, this station, when Urban Meyer was done at Ohio State, I said, you know, the next job he's going to have, he's going to be the head coach at USC. That's going to be the job. I just could see it. I thought he had said he was done coaching. You say never again. Well, he's obviously back, and he's coaching in the NFL. But I said the job that I think that could get him would be USC. At the time, Clay Helton had it. We now know he was fired earlier this week. And today, Urban Meyer was asked about that, and he said, no chance. No chance. Well, first off, you have to say that. You're in week 2 of your brand-new job at Jacksonville. I don't know if I would ever say no chance. I mean, I think you're trying to show confidence with your team, with your organization. Be careful what you say there, Urban. I mean, if SC just gets through this year in an interim basis, and it doesn't even matter what their record is, but they're starting a national search, they want a new head coach, and Urban Meyer has a miserable year. 2-15.
So that's an improvement?
An improvement. One game improvement from a year ago, and one more loss, though, as well. But if SC called, no chance? No chance. I don't think so. I think there's a chance. I don't know if SC is interested. I think they should look at him. There's others, though, that have come up in rumors as teams that would be coaches and programs that maybe would be of interest with USC. Let's start with Penn State's James Franklin talking about those USC vacancy rumors.
As you guys know, I can't stand in any form of distraction. So I'll discuss this today with the leadership council so that we can make sure that all of our energy and all of our energy is on our preparation for Auburn.
You know what? I'm thinking I always try to take these situations and put myself in the shoes of these people, of these coaches, of people that are rumored. I would probably play that card and say, no, I'm happy here. This is where I want to be. But you can have your agents talk to people. I think it's flattering to have your name out there. I would want my name out there. That one could, it just improves your value. Wow, USC is interested in James Franklin. Whether or not it's mutual, whether or not they really are, you like that rumor out there if it's talking about you. It can increase your status with your own school. It could lead to a new job. It could lead to just, hey, when these coaching, it reminds me a lot of when the NFL, anytime, this is probably 5 to 10 years ago, anytime there was an opening, what was always mentioned? Well, will Bill Cowher come out of retirement? Will Tony Dungy at that time? Will John Gruden? They were always the hot coaches, and they weren't even coaching, and you didn't even know if they were interested. Well, we now know that Gruden was more than interested because he got a 10-year, $100 million deal. So that's how James Franklin approached it. Luke Fickell is at Cincinnati. He was hired by the now athletic director at USC, athletic director Mike Bone over there. Here's Fickell talking about the USC rumors.
Look, I don't talk to anybody. I barely talk to my own family during the season. And, so I wouldn't ever talk about it, nor would I have even answer a phone call or anything like that. So I know nothing, nor does it make me have any interest.
Again, I believe some of that statement, but I also believe that's why you have agents. You don't have to talk to them.
I don't also like that.
Right.
Because what if they do offer you the job?
Right.
Would it be it's going to be even worse if you take the job, because you're like, why are you lying to us?
Yeah, and that's why I think every coach's mindset is with good intention, because you're trying to keep what you have now. And what you have now is a season that's just started. I got to be true to my football players. Chris Verlot is our captain. And if I'm saying, I don't know, I'm looking at USC, then you're wondering, but I got to say, Chris, I'm here for you. I'm your coach. We're going to win this all. I'm not even talking about it. But then if you were a junior and you're coming back and it's like, yeah, after the season, guys, it's an opportunity I've always wanted. And it's like, wait a minute. What?
Yeah.
Because that conversation does happen where guys leave programs. So it's a real tricky one where I think I would try to be as transparent as possible, but as honest as possible, too. It's flattering. It's interesting. I'm just focusing on my team right now.
I don't think you have to go that extra step. I think you have to say, you know what? I'm concentrating on the next game. Yep. I'm concentrating on my guys. I'm not worried about what's happening 3 weeks from now, 2 years from now, 4 years from now. I'm concentrating on the next game coming up.
Yes.
You're still saying, I am with you guys.
Right.
But at the same time, you're not putting something out there like, I'm definitely staying here for the long haul.
Yeah, because you're also not leaving for USC next week. So you're at your job finishing this season if you're P.J. Fleck at Minnesota or Fickell or even, you know, the situation with Urban Meyer, Jacksonville. He's finishing this season. Now, he may not be there after this season. So until you're put in that spot where it's truly you're done with your job, I think you have to play it smart, protect what you have, keep the confidence in what you have. And it's also, you know, the other part is what you truly don't know, where USC is saying they're putting on a national search and they're doing an interim basis. Sometimes interim coaches do get the job. I don't know if that's going to be the case here. I feel like they think they need to make a splash and get a name and get that program. I saw comments from ex-Trojan Keyshawn Johnson saying, look, we need to be Alabama. We need to be Clemson. We were Alabama. We were Clemson. We were that team that people talked about. They're not right now. And a coach can help in that, but winning will do that the most.
Sometimes you're an interim coach and you're doing pretty well for USC. Then you lose to UCLA and then they don't hire you back. Then you go on to LSU and you make fun of UCLA again and then you lose again.
I like where you're going there, Chris. You have an example of that? A very specific example, sounded like.
Yep. Going with your wussy blue shirt.
Yes. Anyway, Urban Meyer denying the rumors to USC again. He has to. We get it, but we'll talk to Chris Landry about that coming up at the bottom of the hour.
First things first.
Close things first.
All right, let's get in the NFL this week. A new week of action, week two, now that we wrapped up week one with that Raiders thriller on Monday night. Let's start with the local teams, and we'll start, or I say local, I always count the Raiders still, but the Niners. Niners and Eagles. Niners have stayed across country. They're in West Virginia. You probably heard Eric Armstead weekly, Wednesdays with Carmichael Dave this morning. Heard that interview. And again, a Niner or NFL-related guest every day, 8 o'clock right here on KHDK. Well, tomorrow they will talk to Chris Biederman, the beat writer for the Sacramento Bee at 8:05, so check that out. But the Niners, for me, it's an Eagle team that I did not think would win week one. In all honesty, my picks, I thought Atlanta certainly let me down. At home, new coach, kind of a lot of the same personnel coming back. I thought they would be more ready to go than the Eagles with a new coach and Jalen Hurts. Just even their offseason was a little bit uneven for me. I didn't like the way the coach came in. Is even some of the words you're hearing about what they were doing to compete, rock, paper, scissors, just some goofy stuff that they had going on in Philadelphia. I said, not going to work. But they get out there and play on Sunday, and they win, and they deserve to win, and they crushed Atlanta. So the Niners, I think it'll definitely have the Niners' imagination and kind of capture their full attention. Niners 1-0, Eagles 1-0. For San Francisco, it's the injuries that they had last week. How do they replace that? How do they fit that back in? Can they go a few weeks with staying healthy and without losing key personnel? And then just what's the encore? Again, for the most part, if the game ended after the third quarter, we're probably feeling really good about the 49ers despite the injuries. Well, the game had a fourth quarter. The fourth quarter started to really slip on them, and I didn't think they were really in jeopardy of losing, but it certainly shouldn't have been that close. And you didn't want Detroit to have the ball with a chance to tie it with a touchdown and a two-point conversion. So the Niners did that to themselves. What kind of things do they have to clean up going into week two playing? I think the Eagles are marginally better than Detroit. I'm not that high on either team, but it'll be interesting to see how the Niners take on game two, another road game. They've done this where they've kind of bonded on the road in the past and stayed out east for a couple of weeks. So we'll see how this goes for them and see also that sprinkling packages in of Trey Lance, who threw the first touchdown, had another couple opportunities to run. But I think that is just going to grow as the season goes along. And Jimmy G, after that early fumble, settled in, got some good yardage going. Deebo Samuel was great. So we'll see what week two has in store for the 49ers.
First things first.
First things first.
And lastly, week two coming up, Raiders, Steelers. A game obviously we'll preview at the end of the week on Friday as well. But early thoughts on this one. The Raiders, as we talked about yesterday, had just about every range of emotion that happened in that game. They looked good at the end, self-destructed at the end, still found a way to win at the end. I thought it was a brutal first half for the Raiders. Silver and black off to a slow start offensively. They weren't quite there, but both sides got better. Defense improved as the game went on. Offense certainly improved as the game went on. And so the Raiders, I know there's a couple of injury report things that they're worried about. A couple of guys, even Mariota, may have got injured in that game. So we'll continue to monitor the health of this team. And Pittsburgh, that was a really good win for Pittsburgh going into Buffalo. As you know, Buffalo's the team I picked to win the Super Bowl. A really talented team. And Pittsburgh, just with all that experience, they've been in the battles, kind of the continuity at coaching. Big Ben doing just enough. I'm anxious to see how the rookie Najee Harris runs. Didn't have big stats against Buffalo, but that's a tough defense to run on. So the Raiders are going to have to be on their game. And there's such great historical rivalry here. Such a great one. So much history and tradition between the Raiders and Steelers. And this is a new time, new regime. But, man, some of the greatest moments in the history of the NFL are with those two teams back in the 70s and 80s. And we're so far removed from that, but it's still cool. It still feels like it's out there. And the people that have been around that long, it means a lot to them. And I know the Raiders have moved from Oakland to L.A., back to Oakland, now to Vegas. But it's still the Shield. It's still the Raiders. It's still the Steelers. And I think there's a lot on this game. And, again, both teams 1-0. Trying to get to 2-0 and keep the pressure on the rest of their division. So I think that's a good one to watch this week. We're going to talk about some of those things and the college landscape with Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com. He will join us when we come back. Also, time to tell you to see the return of the Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. We're back with Chris Landry. That is next here on KHDK. Back here on Sports 1140 KHTK, Jason Ross here with you, taking you till the top of the hour. Then it's A's baseball, A's and the Kansas City Royals. So glad to have Chris Landry back with us as a regular on the afternoon show from LandryFootball.com. Does amazing work, has a lot of experience in football and a lot of time on this station covering college, covering the NFL. And let's bring in Chris Landry back here to KHTK. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Great to be with you again.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. We've been covering a lot of stuff here in our first part of the show, and I thought, well, I can't wait to talk to Chris about this and where we're going to start. We'll kind of go college first because of the latest with USC letting go of Clay Helton after just two games. A lot of names are surfacing, but what would make the jump from USC to get to that elite program again? What kind of coach?
You know, listen, I think it's still an elite job. It's still the premier job in the Pac-12. It maybe is not for everybody, you know, if you don't want to deal with the traffic or the cost of living. I mean, it's not for everybody, but I think it's a pretty easy fix. I think they've been undercoached for some time. You know, to say who that guy is, I think there are a number of guys that would fit. I am encouraged at least that Mike Bone has experience hiring. He's a traditional athletic director. USC has struggled in the past, whether it's been Lynn Swann or Pat Hayden, kind of doing what they normally do and not really being, from the athletic director standpoint, really made some bad decisions. So I think there are a lot of good coaches that will be interested. Who win? It's going to take a while. I think they'll do their due diligence. It's going to take until the end of the year to get somebody that's currently coaching. So while everybody's got their list, I don't think I think everybody is as a candidate. From what I can tell, it's easier to put a list together who's not a candidate. The reality is it's going to be a smaller list, and they'll hone in on it, and I think they'll get a good one, but I don't know exactly who it's going to be yet, and we'll have to wait and see as the season progresses.
Why do it after week two? I'm not having any problem with them removing Clay Helton, but why after week two?
Well, I think it was something that, first of all, why wasn't it done before?
Exactly.
They had a lot of money tied in. I don't know how many people know that Lynn Swann secretly, it is a private school, got Clay Helton an extension and a lot more money. So the buyout was much larger. But, you know, after this year, it's going to be less, still a lot, but not as much. I think they kind of bought into, well, we'll make this change or that change. That's always a danger. I love Clay, love his dad, Kim Helton, who I've worked with and know, but I never liked the identity of the program under him. I think they lost a lot of their toughness. I think that air raid is not a fit. This is USC, for goodness sakes. They've got a lot. They should be that premier physical program that can impose their will on folks. And they've lost that. So I think they missed the boat in the past. I think they took it this year, and I think what happened was a combination. It's always the final straw, right? And I think the final straw was you got beat by a Stanford team that was lost against Kansas State the week before. And at the same time, Oregon, which has clearly replaced them as the best program in the league, just got a big win over Ohio State. I think that was the final straw. I think it was coming. I thought it would be towards the end of the year. You can make the case, certainly it should have been before. And I think you could make the case, well, why not wait to the end of the year? I think the feeling is he going to lose the team? Do they try to rally the team to save the season? I just think that all of that kind of came into play in the decision, but I just think they've made poor decisions on giving him a little bit longer and a little bit of a leash. They've dealt with a lot of stuff. The whole, you know, admission scandal, the whole medical, you know, scandal. They've lost a lot of money and a lot of, you know, impact from the university. And I think they were trying to play this out and were hoping. And as they find out, hope is not a strategy. Hmm.
Chris, you mentioned Oregon, Ohio State. Great game last week. And Oregon goes in and wins. What, take it from each program. What does that do for Oregon? What does that do for Ohio State season?
Well, we're going to have to see how Oregon finishes out the season. One of the things we've seen, whether it's been, you know, an Oregon team that's maybe not been able to finish out, this is a good team. I don't know if they're a great team. I don't know if they're an advance in the playoffs type team, but they're very capable of winning the North. Washington struggling on offense. I think while Stanford's good, they're up and down. I think Oregon has every opportunity to run the table. Whether they will or not, that's going to be the key. I think UCLA's good on the south side. I think there'll be challenges for them, no doubt. But I think they're really good, a big win. They've got to finish it up, though. I mean, if they lose a game or two, you know, they ruin what is a great win. And I think for Ohio State, they have no margin for error. I think that game had a lot to do about Oregon, but it had a lot to do about Ohio State as well. Ohio State really is doing a poor job defensively. They struggled in the championship game last year. They struggled defensively against Minnesota. So we're just going to have to see. I think the key games for Oregon, you know, at UCLA, that's going to be a real challenge. And Utah will play them tough. But they can navigate through that. Certainly if they go unbeaten, they're in. A one-loss Pac-12 champion, Oregon, depending on where the loss is, if they lose it, still would have a shot. But, you know, we don't know what else is going to happen around the country. The SEC's got two good-looking teams that have got a chance. Oklahoma might be in the mix. We're just going to have to wait and see. I do think, though, it gives them the upper hand over the Big Ten because I think the only team that's really capable of making the playoffs in the Big Ten is the team that Oregon just beat.
Yeah, gives them a stop. Now they're behind at 0-1 against the Pac-12 at least. How about this weekend, Chris? Again, Chris Landry joining us, LandryFootball.com. Alabama, Florida, 1 versus 11. It's in the swamp, but still feels like Alabama is just that much better. Any shot for Florida?
There's always a shot. I would say outside shot. Athletic quarterbacks at times have given Alabama trouble. I agree with you, though. And while I don't think Alabama's playing a clean game against Miami or even Mercer last week, they're that much better. I don't know that Florida's defense is going to be able to hold down Alabama for four quarters. That's going to be a problem. And I do think that Florida's going to have to get tremendous play. I don't know how healthy Anthony Richardson's going to be. I think they're going to play him a lot. They're going to need some big plays from him with his legs and certainly, you know, in the passing game. I don't know if they can get enough of that. I do like Alabama here. There's always a chance, but I favor Alabama. I think there are more ways in which Alabama can win this game than Florida.
Want to switch to the pros. News is just coming out. I don't know if you had seen this, so I might be sharing this with you. It's just coming out through the NFL about the Cowboys and their dynamic pass rusher, DeMarcus Lawrence, apparently has a fractured foot. Just brutal news for them, who actually I thought looked pretty good last Thursday night in their opener against Tampa Bay.
He really did. It was something they had feared there was a problem, and it was, you know, dealing with it, and it was confirmed. He graded out very well last week. They played very well overall last week against Tampa, and that's a tough matchup, and, you know, a matchup that's pivotal against a Charger team coming up that's played well, finished well, I thought blocked well at the line of scrimmage, better. Slater graded out well, and, you know, Justin Herbert didn't need to be the hero, but he was functional, made plays in the defense, as long as they're pretty healthy. That's a that's a tough game and a tough guy to lose as they need to put pressure on Justin Herbert.
Chris, I want to ask you about the 49ers. They were favored, got through it, actually had a huge lead, looked good at times. Fourth quarter got away from them. A couple of key injuries for the 49ers as they go into week two. But what was your opinion on how they fared and looked against Detroit in the first week?
Well, boy, the injury bug is concerning because it's starting to happen again, and it derailed them last year, and we're not going to go there yet. But it's not off to a good start. The running back room, they run the football well with whoever's there, but there's a limit to that. You're right. Detroit got back in the game, and you watch it. That game wasn't close, and you've kind of alluded to it. This Niner team is good, but they're going to need some breaks health-wise. They're going to be able to run the football. I like what they're trying to do offensively with the young quarterback and spots. I think we'll see him more once they feel he can handle more, but I think they're comfortable enough with wherever they go there. I think defensively this has a chance to develop into a pretty good defense, but they need to get some breaks there. There's no question about it. Some positives addition. I thought the receivers were pretty effective for them. The offensive line is good, but they had some lapses there. The defensive line, I thought, played very well. The linebackers were inconsistent. But I think this team has a really good chance. I think they and the Rams are really good. Cardinals off to a good start. Mm-hmm. Who knows? That division is going to be very competitive, very fun to watch.
Since it's been so long since we talked to you, I'd be curious, how did you grade Trey Lance amongst that all those rookies? Or just where do you grade him? What do you think about his potential?
I think he has loads of potential. I think he's got dynamic playmaking ability. I think he's got good arm talent. I think he can make plays outside the pocket. But he's the least ready, the least experienced. So I think they're going to spoon feed him a little bit and have packages for him. I'm very confident with Kyle running it and feeding him, so to speak. I think it'll work. I think he'll be successful. Only time's going to tell, of course. But I like what they're doing. I like the plan. I think this is a good team. I think you've got to be careful not to throw too much at them too fast. And then all of a sudden, you're reverting to basically bad habits that you have to correct later on that kind of puts you further behind the eight ball.
Yeah, it's such a fine line there because I totally get what you're saying. He does have the least amount of experience, but then how do you get the experience? You want to do that on Sundays? That's a real tricky one, even if they use him in these kind of limited packages on third and short or goal line. Will that be enough to give him that reps and confidence that he's going to need?
That, I think he's got to earn more practice reps. I think that's where you have to do it. I mean, it's people say, well, you can't learn anything until you play, and it's really not true. I mean, when a guy gets it in the classroom setting and he begins to understand to where it's, it's not that you know it, but you know it so well that you can't get it wrong, and then you can take it to the practice field, and then you can absorb it with less reps. That's when you develop a little bit more confidence. Then you can expand the package. Then you can allow them to do a little bit more. But I use it like this analogy. If you throw a guy in too quick, it's akin to somebody going on the driving range hitting a bucket of golf balls. Everybody thinks you're getting better, and you buy a big bucket of balls, and you're not getting better unless you're working on something to improve it. And so practice doesn't make perfect. It makes permanent. So if you teach it correctly, then you can move forward, as opposed to if you throw them out there, go out there and make a play. That's what people want to see. But what you do is ingrain bad habits. You're evading the pocket too quickly, and you're not patient enough to see it develop because you rely on your legs too much. You've got to be able to learn to see it, what to look for. And so you want to use those legs, but you want to use them as something that can aid what you're doing, not as a crutch to not being patient and seeing the routes progress and the coverages progress. So I think it is a fine line, and you've got to just kind of let them go to some degree. But that's the same situation they're in Chicago. I know there's a lot of heat there. But, yeah, just throw them in. Well, there's something to that. But I think doing it this way is the better way for the long term, and particularly for this team that's pretty good. I don't think you want to sacrifice wins in the short term for the long-term gain, but it'll be fun to see how they develop and how quickly they develop.
I want to ask you, Chris, about Monday night, a wild game with the Raiders and the Ravens. Raiders survived it, found a way, got better as the game went along. A lot of pass attempts for the Raiders, but what did you think of Vegas in their first run through this year?
Oh, well, it was exciting to see, you know, the atmosphere and, you know, particularly a place that we knew that would probably really be very supportive, but, you know, we didn't see it all last year. You know, the Raiders, you know, Carr was very tentative. Other than Waller, they really didn't get the receivers involved. It just never felt like they were going to win it. But yet then Baltimore just, you know, really struggled to put them away, and they made mistakes. I thought the defense kept the Raiders in it. And in the end, they made just enough plays to get it done. It was kind of a weird game in that neither team looked like they were taking the bull by the horns to win it, but no one, because no one could win it, you know, somebody was going to lose it and somebody was going to make a play. And fortunately for the Raiders, it was them, and they were able to get it done. So off to, you know, like you get a win, you move on, but boy, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there with the Raiders. I just don't know about the sustainability there. We're going to see against Pittsburgh this week, a Pittsburgh team that didn't do a whole lot offensively themselves last week. But boy, did they play well defensively against the Bills. So quite a challenge going to Heinz Field and taking on that team.
Got to ask you about the Packers. Is that just a 1 week everything went wrong, or is there more to be worried about there?
I think it is. I mean, I think they'll be fine. Detroit has a way to kind of help that out a little bit. I hate to say it. You know, Monday night, they probably get back on track. I think it's a here's the thing. It's not that they lost, because that can happen, but – and that was a beatdown. That was like a beatdown of – I didn't see it. Now, the Saints played very well at the line of scrimmage. But, man, they just completely shut down the Packers off the line of scrimmage. The receivers couldn't get into their routes. Aaron Rodgers bought some time. Not a whole lot of it. No one was open. It was really surprising, and you kept waiting for the Packers to figure some things out offensively. They never could. I don't know that it's an overreaction, all the holdout and this and that. Right. I don't know that that's the case here. I think once he's back with his teammates, he's good. But the performance, the execution, quite frankly, not being able to take it at the line of scrimmage to the Saints, that was the big issue. I think they get back on track this week, but it's a work in progress there. They've got some weapons on offense, and I'm curious to see them start to unleash them this week against a Lions team that couldn't cover very well last week, as the Niners fans know.
When you look at all these games, a lot of the storylines too this year is the three rookie quarterbacks that are starting, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence. They all lost, but guys played differently amongst the game. And when you kind of looked at the way those three played, what did you learn from the rookies in their first start?
Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence don't have a lot of help. They don't have a lot of protection help. Mekhi Becton went out for the Jets to make things even worse. There's not a lot of weapons. There's not a lot of defense that can help you. It's going to be a long season for them, and they're going to have to fight through it. It's just going to be, you know, tough to deal with it and tough love and work through it. Mac Jones is on a better team. Now, you know, I thought he did a really nice job. I thought they made mistakes. I thought you know, Harris, the turnover was key. They were going in, probably should have won the game, and I think he played well enough for them to win. Look, they're going to have to run the football well in New England. I think they can. They're going to have to play good defense in New England. I think they can. So Mac Jones is in the best position to be successful because he's on the better team. And I think of all those quarterbacks that we've talked about today, the young guys, the rookies, he's the one that sees the field and understands the game the best. Now, he has the less physical skills in which to do it, but if you get him a clean pocket, I think he can be very successful. So we'll see how it plays out, but I think it's very interesting to see where this goes. That was a tough loss for New England. They got the Jets this week, and we'll see if they can get on the right track. But I do think Mac can be, you know, pretty successful early on.
Well, Chris, we're so glad you're back with us. We know people need to check out LandryFootball.com. You're on Twitch as well. You got stuff going everywhere. What do they get when they head to LandryFootball.com?
Well, right now, obviously, we focus a lot on the breakdown. So we take you inside the film room to break down all the game matchups, NFL, college football, what the film room says about the matchup. So it gives you a good feel for it. And then on Monday and Tuesday, we recap all the games. So we tell you what the film showed, what really happened, and you know what happened, but why it happened. So we give you that, our notebooks every day. You mentioned we've got all our podcasts that we do. We do conference podcasts for every conference, NFL podcasts. We've got a lot of that. We do it all live on Twitch. So you can check us out. Everything is at LandryFootball.com. It's your hub. check it out. It's like having your own scouting department for less than a magazine subscription. It's really cheap if you take advantage of the year membership. So a lot of great stuff, a lot of fun. We think it's a great companion for the football season, like having your own scouting department. So check it out.
Absolutely. It's LandryFootball.com. Well, we're glad to have you each and every week. Chris, have a good week, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys. Take care.
All right. Thank you. That's Chris Landry. Again, amazing work, and they've just expanded it more and more. LandryFootball.com, full expansive coverage, college, pro, every team, war room, or draft room, film room, all that kind of stuff. Again, you'll want to check that out. All right, break time for us. When we come back, one final segment, still to come, our daily over-under, the crossover, and we're getting you closer to the A's and the Royals. That's all coming up right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Final segment here of the show because we're going to get today's baseball, A's and Royals, coming up in just a few moments. We mentioned there with Chris Landry about the injury to DeMarcus Lawrence. He is out after fracturing his foot in practice today. DeMarcus Lawrence has gone to Twitter. We'll be back and ready for war. Believe it. Well, that's just a different mentality, and I do believe it. Injuries are awful. Hate when it happens at any time, but certainly in practice. So Cowboys banged up going into week two with their matchup this week, but certainly an unfortunate injury for them. A couple more things here, too, on KHDK.com. You can participate in our daily over-under. It's quite simple. You go to KHDK.com. There's a poll on the side, over-under, and all you have to do is participate. Pick the over, pick the under on today's question, and you have a chance to qualify for a $50 gift certificate to Twin Peaks right here in town. Today's over-under strikeouts for Sean Manaea. It is set at 7.5. And right now about 70% say under, 30% say over. I think the last two games for Manaea, if I'm not mistaken, two times on the mound, he struck out 9. So people are believing he's not going to be able to do that again. We shall see. But again, 7.5 is our over-under for Sean Manaea strikeouts. Yeah, the last two outings, 9, 9, and the one before that he had 5. So they're going to need him to get a lot of innings, I think, because Bob Melvin at this point has just got to be afraid to go to his bullpen. I just don't know if he'll want to do that. We'll be back tomorrow also after A's baseball and then leading up to Thursday night football as the first game of this week will be the Washington football team and the New York Giants. Chris, you survived in week one in our survivor pool.
I did.
Our just for fun survivor pool?
I did.
And you picked?
Kansas City Chiefs.
Were you stressed?
Yeah, with Patrick Mahomes on the field.
Come on, they were losing most of the game.
I was actually in the air during that game.
Perfect, because you would have been. I think they were down. It was a weird score. Was it 15-0 at the beginning? Something weird.
I saw Patrick Mahomes score his first touchdown.
Yeah, and the one to Tyreek Hill was ridiculous at the end. But yeah, so they won. That's all that matters. They made it through. I made it through. So do you know who you're going through in week two yet?
Going with the Bucks.
Oh yeah, they're a heavy favorite. Is that Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay. Felt like the Bucks was a play this week. The other large spreads, the Packers. I was thinking about that one against the Lions. I know they looked terrible this week to the Packers. And then the other largest spread, I thought, was the Browns. Browns against the
Texans.
What's
bad is we all saw the Packers get blown out. It's like, ooh, that was weird. So you're thinking, oh, well, there's no way that they're going to lose to the Lions. But if then they get blown out again, you just look like an idiot.
Right. That the beginning of this is always the most difficult because it really got to settle in to figure out at least what you think you know about these teams. But each week's a different deal, and that's what makes the NFL so great. All right, let's get the crossover from the morning show.
What's happening on the Carmichael Dave Show? Let's find out right now with the crossover.
Do you believe it?
Here's today's crossover.
Crossover question for you, Jason Ross 2.0. You asked about the weekend update anchors, obviously with Norm MacDonald in mind. I will ask you, because you and I are both, we were texting yesterday, we're huge Norm fans. Do you have a most memorable Norm MacDonald moment? And I know that's tough. If not, give me your top three. But when you think Norm MacDonald, if you had to show a video of Norm MacDonald to a friend who'd never seen him before, is there something that you would break out? RIP Norm MacDonald. We have lost a great one.
I did a lot of that yesterday, Chris, watching a lot of Norm MacDonald stuff. You told me about his roast with Bob Saget.
Yes.
He would he zigged when others were zagging, or the other way around. Like, he did the most pedestrian, tame, kind of awkward and not funny jokes, but it was norm. And he would stare at you until you laughed, or just would commit to these cards that he had these jokes on that felt like very 1950s, super non-offensive, when everything usually on those Comedy Central comedy roasts is just over the top. It's directed at a person, but that could just be a joke to somebody. It doesn't even have to fit the person that they're targeting. And you just go, whoa, some of this is just way out there. And he just went, not even PG, like G, and just deliver. That was bizarre, but it was norm.
Have you watched recently his SNL that he hosted?
The only time
that he hosted SNL?
Well, I know I saw it. I'm not even remembering this.
Oh, it's actually a very good episode.
What year was that?
99, I believe. Okay. So, like, in his monologue, he's like, it's been a year and a half since I was fired here.
Okay.
And I got fired for not being funny, which is hilarious because now I'm considered so funny that I should actually be hosting the show. And then he goes on to say, now, in a year and a half, you can't become funny. So what's happened? I believe that the show has become so bad that I'm funny.
That's great. That's typically him. And Dave asked if there was a video I would show. Well, I did show a couple. Him with Conan is great. They had great.
Yes.
Conan's a good host in that he laughs. Not that he's laughing like a courtesy. He breaks. He gets him.
Yeah.
I think Norm has the ability to go in weird places where the people that are with it's uncomfortable, but yet he still finds the funny. So I think Conan and Courtney Thorne Smith, and then Norm is fantastic. Also, something I hadn't seen until last night, I think Howard Stern had him on not that long ago, but they were talking about he was the last comedian on David Letterman, and I didn't know their relationship. And Norm got really emotional.
Yeah.
And he was breaking down. And I thought that was, again, it's this surprise element from him. I did not see that from him at all. And that took me back. That was actually pretty amazing.
Another great one with Conan, and I totally forgot about it. This one was, I think it was his last week on NBC for The Tonight Show. And he had a congratulations basket that he said that he kept forgetting to give him. And it was like his last week. And so he's like, oh, can I read you the card? And the card is just like, NBC has made the best move ever. You are the new king of late night. No one can ever take this away from you.
Perfect.
And then a movie, I don't know if you've seen the movie. I'm guessing you haven't. One of his best movies is the movie Screwed, which hardly anyone has seen. But it's got him, Dave Chappelle, Sarah Silverman, Danny DeVito, Sherman Helmsley. Yeah. It's such a great and bizarre movie, but it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance, check that out.
He's just talented. He doesn't always hit, but SNL, the ESPYs hosting, like just some classic uncomfortable nature jokes.
Seth Meyers was giving his stories, and he was like saying the funniest things he heard Norm Macdonald say, and he said it was one of the first times that he saw him, and he's taking his son when his son was a little kid walking around SNL, and someone asked him, hey, Norm, how's it being a dad right now? He's like, oh, it's great. He hasn't been abducted once.
Classic Norm.
It's like not on TV. It's right. Just like,
just saying it.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of people, like there was a time when the cast was there, oh, Will Ferrell's the funniest here by far. Like it's just, everyone would say it's Will. But I guess back then everyone said it was Norm. Norm was the funniest person there. And just that edge he would always walk. So thank you for that, Dave. We appreciate that. Check out Dave tomorrow, as we mentioned. Chris Biederman will join him at 8 o'clock to give you more Niners coverage, Niner preview as well. That's it for us. We are back tomorrow following A's baseball, leading up to Thursday night football. But A's baseball is coming your way next. It's the A's and the Royals right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. See ya!